Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something
course was the Hermits Hermits song, Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, as covered by Frank in 1995, another of my favorites by her. And you'll want to stick around, because this segment will include two songs by her that have not yet been released, one of which she sang for me during our interview. Frank was in Houston last month because she's been on tour with a group called The Knitters. So let's get to the interview. How did you get started in music?
Well, I listened to music from the time I was really small. Both of my grandfathers played the violin and the guitar, and I grew up with great records in the house, Broadway show tunes, Alan Sherman, Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Judy Garland. So I listened to lots of records growing up. I had my favorite records that I had were called Red Raven Records, and they were colorful plastic records, and the paper label on the inside had cartoons on them, and you put a magic mirror on it that looked like a little carousel, and it sat on that little stump in the middle of the record player, and when it turned around, it made a little movie in the faceted mirrors. And so those were my very, very favorite records, Toot Toot Toodles the Tugboat, and Happy Birthday to You.
And how did you get the name Frank?
How did I get the name Frank? Well, I changed my name at the Lesbian History Exploration in May of 1975. And I named myself Frank, F-R-A-N-C, when I was up there at that lesbian retreat. At that retreat, I met Alex Dobkin and, a number of Elsa Gidlow, incredible lesbians, and Eliza Cowan, who showed had a fashion show, and she showed a slideshow called What the Well-Dressed Dyke Will Wear. And there I saw these dykes resplendent in three-piece suits and buzzed hair, and I was so moved. I changed my name already, and when I came home, from that expedition, I got on the bus and I went straight to the barbershop and I had all of my hair buzzed off and I went to show my friend Pumpkin my new haircut and tell her my new name, and I showed up at her door and she opened the door and she said, "Wow." And I said, "My name is Frank." And she went, "Frank." She says, "Just stay right there." And she went in the other room and she came back with a blue baseball hat with a P on it. And she put it on my head and she said, "Frank, P-P-H, P-H-R-A-N-C. So that's how I got my P-H. So.
And the title that seems to be all yours is All-American Jewish Lesbian Folk Singer.
Yes, that is the moniker that I have given myself, the All-American, the basic average All-American Jewish Lesbian Folk Singer.
And your first band was Nervous Gender?
That's the first band I was in. I've been playing since I was 14, doing shows, but probably from when I was 17, I played mainly like lesbian coffee houses. There were just a few of those. And then when I was 19, I was in Nervous Gender, which was a synthesizer band in Los Angeles, part of the very avant-garde, screamer-ish kind of scene that was attached to the local Los Angeles punk rock scene.
Did you record anything with them?
No, I didn't. They recorded, but I never recorded with them. So there's a number of Nervous Gender things out, but I don't think there's anything with me singing on it. I don't think.
And then to Catholic Discipline.
Catholic Discipline and Nervous Gender and Castration Squad, everything kind of overlapped all around the same time. I was in Nervous Gender, and then I got asked to be in Catholic Discipline. And there's a new actual Catholic Discipline recording out on Artifix Records, which is pretty good. I mean, it's pretty true to what it was really like. A lot of really kind of crummy live recordings, yeah, but they really capture that drum set kind of getting away from Craig, so that's kind of cool, yeah.
The CD is called Underground Babylon, and I want to mention a couple songs from it. Barbie Doll Lust.
Barbie Doll Lust, yes. It's not normal.
European Sons.
European Sons is the Velvet Underground song. So it's pretty great.
And you played guitar with them.
I played guitar, yes.
You didn't sing.
I sang on, every once in a while we do Pablo Picasso and I sang that.
What prompted your switch from punk to folk?
I mean, technically it was a switch, but inside me, I've always been a folk singer, so, but to go back to playing acoustically, the motivation behind it is directly related to the song Take Off Your Swastika. And I wrote that as a reaction to basically the fashion that was going on during the punk scene at the time, which was people were wearing swastikas. I'm Jewish. It made me angry. I wrote the song Take Off Your Swastika. And since I wrote that song, I wanted people to be able to hear the words. And so that was why I started playing acoustic again. And the great thing was that the audience didn't change. I still played to all the same people that I played to in the bands. It was all the punk audiences. It was all the same clubs. I was still playing with all of the same bands, but I was playing acoustic, so you could hear the words. And that was the kind of the start of my solo career.
Let's hear a little of Take Off Your Swastika.
It really nauseates me. You say, Frank, it's just a symbol. It's just an emblem. It's just a righteous decoration. What it means, a little more to me. 'Cause the fascism isn't anarchy. Fascism isn't anarchy. Fascism is not anarchy.
That was Take Off Your Swastika, an early song by her, though it did not appear on record until her 1989 release called I Enjoy Being a Girl. Do you see a connection between the genres punk and folk?
You know, a lot of people have made comparisons between punk rock and folk music, and basically what it is for me, the difference between punk rock and folk music was that folk music, I believe, tells a more linear story a lot of the time. But basically, the only true difference is speed and sound. Because folk music's a little bit slower, and you can hear the words a little bit better. But a lot of the passion, the idea, the energy, the politic is very much the same as punk rock.
Your style is unique. Looking over the years, you write about people and you write about issues.
Yes, I do. I feel that great folk songs take current events and they make them historical documents. And they save them and record them in a way that anyone could listen to at any time and be able to get the information that they need in a way that's very special. It's kind of better than reading the paper or going to the library. It's a very special way of sharing information. And folk songs through the ages have told silly stories, and then a lot of them have told very political stories. And I think I do a little bit of both.
How did you land the record deal with Rhino Records?
I made my first record, Folk Singer, and it's the 20th anniversary of that record. And so I pressed some records just for this tour, some CDs, I should say. But it came out as a record on vinyl. And I'd saved my money from teaching swimming. I saved $1,200 from teaching swimming and lifeguarding in Santa Monica. And I didn't know anything about making records. I knew the kind of record I wanted to make. I knew I wanted to make a solo acoustic record. I knew I wanted it to be like very true and very simple and plain. And my friend Craig Lee from The Bag said, "We're going to go in and make your record. I know right where for you to go." And he took me to see Ethan James at a little studio in Venice, California called Radio Tokyo Studios. And I went in there with my handful of songs, and Folk Singer is what came out of that. And I recorded that for $1,200. And when I was finished with it, Gary Stewart from Rhino Records said, "We'll put it out." And so I was very fortunate in that somebody was interested and put that record out right away. But people often say, you know, what should I do to make a record? How can I get my record out? And my attitude has always been, you know, don't wait around for somebody else to do it for you. If I had waited around for somebody to want to make my record, I don't know if I'd ever have made a record. So I just saved my money up and made my own record. And, you know, we're very much back to that old do-it-yourself way of doing things right now, and I really encourage that, especially in this very indie, independent world we're in now.
I want to go through your albums. Folk Singer was the first and came out in 1985. From it, please tell me about the song Amazons.
Amazons is my tribute to all of the great women in sports, and at that time, it really is a historical document now, because a lot of the athletes that I'm singing about, the song is 20 years old, if not 25. And so they were at their peak then. Cheryl Miller as a wonderful basketball player. Annie Myers, Utami Kennard, the great badminton player. Diana Nyad is now a sportscaster on NPR. You hear her all the time. But she was best known then for her great prowess at long distance swimming. And she is one of my great heroines. So many of the women that I acknowledge in that song were great inspirations to me.
Oh, give me a pair of pectorals like Diana Nyad. I want to swim 89 miles. Give me a set of deltoids like Tracy Calkins. I want to be strong like those Amazons. I want to learn to dribble like Annie Myers. I want to learn to shoot like Cheryl Miller. I wanted to play for the Dallas Diamonds and live with Martina like Nancy Lieberman. Strong, strong. Strong, strong like an Amazon.
Tell me about Life Lover.
Life Lover is a song that I wrote a very long time ago. It was one of the very first songs that I wrote around the time of Take Off Your Swastika. I wrote the song in a suicidal state. I wrote the song because I was so depressed that I wanted to die. And I thought, if I write this song and I kill myself, I'll look really stupid. It was a self-preservation that I wrote that song out of. And I tell you, it has completely turned around and become my anthem. And but that's where that song came from. It came from a very dark place, and my life has become very bright because of it.
Recently, friends have been departing permanently, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. Yes, recently, friends have been departing permanently, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me. Now all my parts work, my eyes and my nose, my hands, my fingers, my legs and my toes, and that makes me love life. Oh yes it does. I'm not gonna go away, I'm here to stay, because recently friends have been disappearing mysteriously, but not me. I plan to stick around, you see, 'cause I'm a life lover, that's me.
On the reissue of the album is the extra track, Everywhere I Go, I Hear the Go-Go's.
Yes, I did include that extra track, Everywhere I Go, I Hear the Go-Go's, which is exactly what it's about. It was the time kind of grew up with the Go-Go's in the punk rock scene and was very friendly with them and watched their meteoric rise to success. And that's really what that song was about, just watching them become like the biggest deal.
Everywhere I go, I hear the Go-Go's. Everywhere I go, I hear them sing. Everywhere I go, I hear the Go-Go's. People in sports cars doing their thing. They do the cool jerk over in Westwood. They do it down in Newport Beach. They listen to the Go-Go's in Miami, 'cause they're the height of popularity. Jane can't go out even to cool places. That's the price, one piece for fame. Some people can't believe that they've made it. Oh, but they practiced every day. And now everyone wants to be like Belinda. Every girl wants to be like her, 'cause she's the picture of femininity, and no one wants to look like me. Everywhere I go, I hear the Go-Go's. Everywhere I go, I hear them sing. Everywhere I go, I hear the Go-Go's.
I have an English 45 of yours with Amazons on one side and El Salvador on the other, and that song was never released on an album.
It was released only in England as a 45, so it's on Stiff Records. Folk Singer came out on Stiff Records. There's also a 12-inch. Was it a 12-inch or 10-inch EP released in England with El Salvador, Charlotte, and Amazons on it?
From that hard-to-find English 45, here's just a bit of El Salvador.
They're fighting in El Salvador. They're fighting in El Salvador. I looked at a map, it's right next door. It's just below Mexico, the place where all the hipsters go to buy their skull rings and switchblades. They're fighting in El Salvador. They're fighting in El Salvador. They're fighting 'cause the people are mad enough for the fascist hunter they've had.
If you were listening closely, you heard Frank mention that the song El Salvador only came out in the UK on a 45, coupled with Amazons and another song, Charlotte. Well, Charlotte was also never released on an album, so I want to share that with you as well.
I like Charlotte. I think she's real swell. And if you don't like her, well, you can go to hell, 'cause I like Charlotte. She's a real swell girl. I like Charlotte. I like the way she plays guitar.
I like Charlene, 'cause she's got a real great right arm. I like Charlene, she's a real swell girl. Now she's got bangs and she's got lips. What a pair of hips. I like Charlene. I think she's real neat, 'cause when I look at her, she makes me feel great. I like Charlene, she's a real neat girl. Now they used to call her Junkie behind her back, but she was in a methadone program, and I respect that. I like Charlene. I think she's real swell, and if you don't like it, Buster, you can burn an H-E-double-L, 'cause I like Charlene. She's a real swell girl. I like Charlene.
We're up to 1989 and your second album. Tell us about the title track, I Enjoy Being a Girl.
I Enjoy Being a Girl is Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's a totally delightful song. It comes from the soundtrack of the Flower Drum Song. Pat Suzuki sang it on her record. And I love doing the song live. When I used to perform it when the record came out, I Enjoy Being a Girl, I would toss out tampons to the crowd. So there are still a few of those signature tampons around, I think. They were stamped, so each one said, I enjoy being a girl.
Like a filly who is ready for the race. When I have a brand new hairdo and my eyelashes all in curl, I float as the clouds on air do. I enjoy being a girl. When men say I'm cute and and my teeth aren't teeth, but pearl, I just lap it up like honey. I enjoy being a girl. I flip when the fella sends me flowers.
Tell us about the song, Martina.
Oh, Martina, of course, is my great tribute to Martina Navratilova, perhaps the greatest woman athlete of all time.
Oh, I got up at 7. Just to watch her win. Playing on the worn grass courts at Wimbledon. If anyone should ask me who's the greatest, well, I would have to say, without a doubt in my mind, it's M-A-R-T-I-N-A. 'Cause M-A-R-T-I-N-A, she's the greatest in the world today. N-A-V-R-A-T-I-L-O-V-A, she's the greatest in the world today. Now Steffi, she's worked hard and she's earned my respect, but when it comes to the game of tennis, it's Martina who's the best. 'Cause M-A-R-T-I-N-A, N-A-V-R-A-T-I-L-O-V-A, she's the greatest in the world of women's tennis. That's
looking over your catalog, which song of yours gets the most audience reaction?
Reaction, I would say, probably the most current and the most topical song. Like, I'll Play Tonight, you'll watch. You'll see Condoleezza will probably get the biggest reaction. But political songs get a great reaction. Take Off Your Swastika still gets a very powerful reaction. Life Lover always gets a great reaction. And I end all my shows with Life Lover. But you'll watch the Condoleezza song tonight. It'll probably get a lot of attention. Whatever's the most topical song usually gets the biggest reaction at the time. And then it's always nice when people have favorites. So we'll see. We'll see what's the big hit tonight.
And here's the song she was talking about. And it is very topical, called Condoleezza.
Thank you.
you're scaring me. Condoleezza, 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 you're scaring me. Who do you see in those mirrors that you keep on your desk? Is it the little girl inside of you, that ice skating perfectionist? Condoleezza, 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 you're a mystery. Condoleezza, 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 now I'm gonna shake your tree. That little boy you babysit, a.k.a. the president, Condoleezza, haven't you got better things to do? You help the world go to hell, now you can run the NFL. Condoleezza, that's what you'd really love to do. Condoleezza, 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 come on, tell the truth. Condoleezza, 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 you're musical, come on, you could change your tune. I'm mighty like Chevron, I'm just a Jewish lesbian. And Condi, I can't name a tanker after you. So tell me what I have to do. Should I translate it into Russian for you? Condoleezza, bring home the troops.
That was a Queer Music Heritage exclusive. Hashish not recorded that song yet, and sang it for me during our interview. The album Positively Frank came out in 1991, and I love that on it you did the song Tipton.
Ah, yes. It's my song for Billy Tipton. Yeah, that was a tragedy.
Can you talk a moment about that song?
I wrote the song about Billy Tipton after reading the article about his death, and the loneliness of his death really moved me, and his life as a musician, his identity, and I identified with the other life that he had to live to do what he loved to do. And I have not had to have an other life, and yet my life has been very other in many ways. And the gender issue is always challenging for society and the world, more so than it is for me. I feel very self-identified, and I feel very strong, but the world is very, very brutal. And I wrote the song for Billy Tipton because I loved his power, and I loved what he did, and I loved that he was so dedicated.
On the floor of a trailer in Spokane is the body of a woman who lived as a man, who played piano in a big band. And I know more than I read in the pages of the tabloid magazines. Billy,
Billy Lee, Billy, were you afraid? For 50 years of masquerade, and you shaved every day. For 50 years of masquerade, tell me, were you in much pain, Billy? And your wife said they never knew it really was a woman they were married to. Now how could that possibly be true, Billy?
I've started my show before with Surfer Girl. I love that arrangement.
It's beautiful, and it's part of the reason it's so beautiful is because Sid Straw is singing with me. She is the harmony vocal on that, and that's just such a great song. And doing it with Sid was such a treat, and I feel really lucky that we have it recorded.
Tell us who she is.
Sid Straw was in the Golden Palominos, and then she went on to make solo records. She had a record out on, I think it was on Virgin, and this was in the 80s. She's still around. She still sings. She's a great... great vocalist.
We're talking about the Positively Frank album, and on it, the group Two Nice Girls helped you out.
Yes, Two Nice Girls. That was a lot of fun. We recorded that at Willie Nelson's old studio. We had a blast. Warren Brule came out and produced it, and I came to Austin, and we recorded, how many songs we did together? 3 or 4 songs on that record? Yeah, we had a great time. We had a great time.
A song from that album, I'm Not Romantic, came out in England on a 45 with a wonderful photo of you draped in satin and combat boots.
Yeah, that was a great... In fact, Island Records released it in England, and the photograph on the cover was taken in New York, wasn't taken in England, but it was really fun. And when we shot the jacket, and I am wearing nothing except for a sheet and my combat boots... And the big deal about having that photo done was just, it was kind of a dream come true. But we shot a TV commercial to go with it. And it was kind of a takeoff on, I think it was the Calvin Klein commercial at the time that slowly panned up the body to the underwear. And so it was in the commercial, the camera starts on my boots and it slowly pans up my body. Until you get to my head, and then I says, I'm just being frank, you know.
And you can see a scan of that very seductive photo on my site. Around this time, you did a Neil Diamond impersonation act called Hot August Frank.
Hot August Frank. Well, what happened in 1991 was Positively Frank came out. It started to gain some momentum. Everybody was really excited about it. As far as the label was concerned, it was the most radio accessible record I'd ever made. And I was on this huge tour. Morrissey called me to come and open his tour, which was a world tour. We started in England. We did the States. We were going to go on and do Japan and Australia. It was a very exciting time. And what happened was we got to the point we got to Boston, and I was doing a live radio show in Boston. And on the air in Boston, technician at the studio came in and said that I had gotten a phone call. And so I went in the other room to take the phone call, and it was my father telling me that my brother had been murdered. And that was kind of it for me. I went home, and I disappeared for a long time. It was just the end of the tour for me, and... That was July 2nd, 1991. And the tour had started in April. So I was away for a couple months. And then July 2nd, I went home. And in September, October, the label dropped me, and that was kind of the end of my career for a little while there. And I didn't really want to sing. Morrissey asked me to come back on the tour, and I tried. I went and did a date in England, and it really wasn't any good for me. I couldn't be in front of people. So I went home and I made art, and it was one of the things that I could do. And if you go to my website, you can see, you can click on Cardboard Cobbler. And I started making my visual art again, because it was something I could do and be creative without people watching me, and it made me happy. And so that was the start of me doing illustration and returning, because I'd always done visual art, but really kind of focusing on that again. And then I needed a way to get back on stage. So the question you asked me was about Neil Diamond. And what happened was, years before, I had done a workshop at a folk festival, the Mariposa Folk Festival in Canada. And Jin Sibri was part of that panel. And the title of the workshop was The Worst Song I Ever Learned. And when I was a kid, the worst song that I ever learned was Solitary Man. And I hated that song. And so I did the song in that workshop, and I talked about it. And I had been talking to somebody about it during the time where I was making my art, and I described that, and they said, oh, you should do Neil Diamond. I mean, like, you should sing Neil Diamond. And I was like, yeah, right. And then I thought, that would be a really fun way to get back on stage, to not be me, to be somebody else. And so that's where Hot August Frank came from. And I think I was with Holly Hughes at the time, and she's the one who said, Hot August Frank. And I went, yeah. And so the rest is kind of history, because it got things rolling for me again. You know, I put my chest hair on and I got back on stage, and it was a tremendous success. It was a lot of fun. I put a band together. The band was terrific. And so that was a real turning point for me. It really got me on stage. It really helped me. And after that, I was kind of back on my feet again, and I had songs that I wanted to make and that I wanted to do, and I always wanted to do Ode to Billy Joe, and I started writing songs again. I had been surfing every day since my brother died. I wrote Surfer Dyke Pal, and I wrote Bulldagger Swagger. You know, a lot of stuff happened, and I had Frank opening for Hot August Frank, so Frank was the opening act, and then, you know, she would talk about how great Hot August Frank was, and then she would leave the stage, and then Hot August Frank would come back with the band. So it was really great on a lot of levels.
Another non-album song is Hillary's Eyebrows.
Hillary's Eyebrows came out as a 45 on Kill Rock Stars in red vinyl. And I haven't done it in a while, but I think I'm going to work it up again, maybe edit it a little, change it around, and make it as the companion piece to Condoleezza in preparation for 2008.
Hillary's eyebrows aren't the same color as the hair on her head, but that's okay, I'd rather have a new health plan instead. And it's alright with me if her eyebrows don't match perfectly. Betty, Jackie, Nancy, Rosalind, fashion victims, all of them. But Hillary, she doesn't have a clue. She's too busy working for me and you.
On the Goofy Foot album from 1995, there's another neat song called Surfer Dyke Pal.
Surfer Dyke Pal is written about my best friend, my best surfing buddy, Lori Valesco. And I met her at Malibu Surfing. We became best friends, and she is my Surfer Dyke Pal.
Well, I surfed this morning with Buffalo. A really glassy dawn patrol. There's a storm coming, I can feel the swell. I'm calling up my Surfer Dyke Pal. I surf cloud break, Tabaroo. Charge gas chambers, poop Ikea. But I love surfing Malibu. But my Surfer Dyke Pal really knows how to pull up. Thank you.
surfing with my surfer died pal.
Team Dresch, or at least Donna Dresch, helps you out on the Goofy Foot album.
Team Dresch changed my life. Team Dresch, I was invited to play a show in San Francisco at the San Francisco Women's Building, and it was put together by Q-Tip, Queers Together in Punkness. And it was a very cool, kind of do-it-yourself show put on by this little queer punk community. It was me, Team Dresch, Bucktooth Varmints, and Cheesecake. And I had never seen Team Dresch before. I had only heard of them. And when I saw them play, I hadn't been that moved for many, many years. I stood in that audience just completely inspired, crying because I was so excited. And I had such a strong identification with them and loved them so much. And we made friends that night, and we're still friends today. I talked to Jody from the road, and she just had a kid, and I talked to Donna. I stay in touch with everybody from the band.
They did a song for you called Uncle Frank.
They did Uncle Frank, which, wow, I'm still very touched by that.
Is that your voice at the beginning of the recording?
Yep, it's me talking to Jody on the phone. I was in the bathtub.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, Short.
What's happening?
I'm just taking a bath.
Well, Frank, remember what you told me the last time I called?
Short, what did I say?
Your most recent album, Milkman, came out in 1998. From it, tell me about the song Ozzie and Harriet.
Ozzie and Harriet is a song that I wrote just being devastated by love, never thinking I was going to ever find anybody. And I had really kind of given up. So much to the point that I had given up that I decided that I had just given up on women and I was just going to stick to birds. And I had Pickles, I got a parrot, so I wanted to have a relationship that would last more than the parakeet's lifespan. So I got a bird that would last 50 years, Pickles Pie. And Pickles Pie is with me today, as well as my partner and the kids. And then we have an expanded family. Pickles is like my first wife with wings. And Ozzie and Harriet... It just kind of shows how old-fashioned I am.
I am not a swinger. I'll put on a V-neck sweater, but that's as far as I will go. 'Cause one-on-one is all I know. 'Cause I'm so
do you think your music's changed over the course of your five albums?
I don't know. I think my guitar playing is probably a little bit stronger, and I know a little bit more about what I want something to sound like maybe when I record it, but I still write exactly the same way, and I'm still moved by the same things, and I'm not a very prolific writer. I write in chunks. I'll write a whole record, and then I won't write for a couple of years. I mean, I'll take notes, or I'll write a line, or I'll play my guitar, but I'm not somebody that writes tons of songs all the time, you know. That's just not how I work. So I think, you know, production on my records has changed a little bit. It's gotten a little bit, maybe fuller.
Is there any message you hope your music gets across?
Message? The goal when I play is to... I want people to enjoy it. I want people to have fun. And perhaps during that time when they are laughing and having fun, it will occur to them to maybe think about a situation, a political idea, something that happens in their daily life. And I would like to be the one that sparks that.
Is there a song that you would think of as being the most proud of?
Proud of? I don't know. Life Lover is a very important song to me. I'll tell you one thing that was a really incredible experience and that I am very proud of is I've always worked alone and I've never really collaborated with anyone on writing anything. And in 1990, I wrote a song with Dave Alvin. And Dave's playing in the Knitters tonight and he's a great friend. But I had never written anything with anyone. And we sat down and we wrote the song Hitchcock together. And I'm very proud of that song. I think we both did a great job, and he plays beautifully on it on the Positively Frank record. And I'm pretty proud of that. And I think I'd like maybe to collaborate more. It's pretty hard for me. I'm very much a solo artist.
Would you talk about that song?
Oh, Hitchcock is it's a love song. It has lots of references to Alfred Hitchcock and all of his leading ladies. And it's a song that I sat down. I had watched Vertigo the night before. I had broken up from a relationship, and my old girlfriend had looked. She had dyed her hair a bunch of times, but she looked just like Kim Novak. And so that's kind of the opening line of Hitchcock. When you went blonde, you looked just like Kim Novak. So, and we kind of took it from there. And so I am proud of that song.
When you went blonde, you looked just like Kim Novak. You looked like her when you were brunette, too. And I must have cried a million tears when I watched Vertigo. 'Cause both of her look so much like you. And Alfred Hitchcock had it easy. Me, I got it hard. Just an actress, but to me more than a star, more than a star.
What do you think your contribution has been to queer music?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what my contribution to queer music is. Hopefully I have a contribution that's bigger than just to queer music, but the point of me being on stage and coming out as a lesbian and being so vocal about being a lesbian on stage, and I still feel very strongly about that, is people say to me from time to time, oh, come on, Frank, you know, do you still have to say it? Everybody knows you're a dyke. Everybody knows you're a lesbian. And, hey, it's no big deal anymore. Well, you know, I personally feel that it is a very big deal. It's still a big deal because people are still killing themselves because they're gay and lesbian and they feel like they're the only ones in the world. And it might be hard for some people to believe in the world where I think part of society thinks that there's a lot of gay liberation and there are a lot of gays and lesbians that are out in entertainment. Well, the truth is there's just a handful, if that. And that doesn't really help when you're 13, 14, 16, 17, coming out and feeling like you're the only one in the world, or knowing that somebody is out there, but you can't get to them, and you can't connect. When I was 17, I found out that there was a drop-in lesbian feminist rap group at this tiny women's center in Venice. And I lied. I told my mom I was going to the library, and I rode my bike to that little tiny women's center. And that changed my life because I finally met women who were just like me. You know, they were 10 years older than me. There wasn't anything for me when I came out at that age. But I found others that were like me. And I feel that if I stand on stage and I come out, I don't know who's going to see me. I don't know who I'm going to reach. But hopefully, hopefully I can give some hope to someone out there so that they can grow up and be exactly who they are, whether they're straight, whether they're queer, whether they're trans, whether they're dykes. Everybody should have the opportunity to grow up and be who they are. If there's any message, that's the one that I'd like to spread.
Tell me about the Tupperware lady.
Oh, the Tupperware lady. Well, I did sell Tupperware. In fact, I still have my toe in the plastic. In 1999, when we had our first daughter, I did not want to go on tour. I did not want to leave the house. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to leave my family, my new family. And so I had to figure out a way where I could stay home, make my records, and make money. And it was kind of a joke. I said to Lisa, I said, I could sell Tupperware. And she said, yeah, right, you're going to sell Tupperware. And I said, no, I love Tupperware. I'm going to sell Tupperware. And I opened the phone book and I called Tupperware, where the rest has become history. Because what came out of that was not only did I find a new women's community, not only did I love Tupperware, love the women, learn a lot, and I started selling like gangbusters. So I became very, very, very successful at Tupperware. Climbed the ranks in the Tupperware world. And actually, there was a documentary made about my first year selling Tupperware that's called Lifetime Guarantee, Frank's Adventures in Plastic, which was greatly received at festivals all around the world and is still awaiting distribution. Hopefully that's going to happen soon. But I had a lot of fun and made a lot of money. And it was because I needed to find an alternative way to make money and still do all the stuff that I love. So it enabled me to stay home, still make my records, still write my songs, be with my kids, do the Tupperware parties at night. And Tupperware is still fantastic. I mean, and it's very empowering for women. And it's a really, really great experience.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Tupperware party. Oh, hey. I'm your Tupperware lady. Yeah. I'm your Tupperware lady.
I want to thank Frank for providing me with the unreleased song, Tupperware Lady. What is ahead for you musically?
I hope to have a new record out by, hopefully, the holidays, but I should be out touring again in the spring. That's my goal, to be out touring again in the spring. Mark my words. Might not be a really long tour, but I'll be out with something new, record this Condoleezza song, and have a whole new record full of new material. And if you go to my website, folksinger.com with a PH, you will be able to find out all my tour dates, when my new record's coming out, buy Tupperware, look at my artwork, maybe buy my artwork, and hopefully be able to download songs soon. So I'm working on that. I have two art shows coming up when I get back to Los Angeles, and we still have, I think, 5 or 6 dates left on this tour. So this tour has been really, really great. I really want to thank, on the air, I'd really like to thank Exene Cervenka of X and the Knitters for inviting me on this tour, because it's really just inspired me and reminded me that this is what I still do, you know? I'm still the all-American Jewish lesbian folk singer. I still sing songs that hopefully make a difference, and I still have a lot of fun.
Now I've got one more song to share with you, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and to thank Tony Armstrong Jr. and Frank for the wonderful interviews. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com, and I wish you would. My website, of course, is at www.queermusicheritage.com, and also at www.queermusicheritage.org. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. I usually save my favorite song by an artist and use it to close the show, and that's what I did with Frank's song, Bull Dagger Swagger. In 1995, a 5-song EP came out called Goofy Foot, and it contained my favorite song of yours, Bull Dagger Swagger.
I'm trying to think of how I wrote Bull Dagger Swagger. I know I originally wrote it on the ukulele. It's very danceable. It's very self-affirming. It's funny. It's dykey. I really like it, and I can't remember how I came to write it, but it's one of my favorites too. I think, really do.
To every young man who can't pass, from every lipstick lazy lass, from every drag queen's high heeled stagger, to every bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, yeah. I went to charm school, I got a degree in full-fledged femininity. You know now, I'm not trying to be a man, I'm just a being who I am, and that's a very, very, very butch, a lesbian. Do the bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, yeah. Uh-huh. Little girl giggled, a lady gasped, one woman almost had a heart attack. She started doing the bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger, yeah, yeah. To every young man who every lipstick, lazy lass, from every drag queen's high-heeled stagger, to every bull dagger swagger, do the bull dagger swagger.